mind throwing a leg over the ball this quiet.
Oh, Huffs, he might be out of play for a little while.
Yes, hello and welcome to the Baldcast, the Wednesday edition of the Fox Football Cast, the weekly roll call. Brenton Speed.
In the house.
Andy Harper.
Hey, I'm present.
On the phone, obviously. Murray Shaw present on the show. The Purple Rain has begun in Perth and will pay tribute to Prince Popper and his A-League revolution as the cream rises to the top in the countdown to the finals. A couple of greats have decided to call it a day and we'll look at their legacy. What went wrong at Newcastle this season? And plenty more, so let's go crazy and party like it's 1999, Speedy.
Wow, well worked.
How many did I get in?
Was it six?
About five, I think it was.
Five or six.
Who's counting, Prince
fans laughing it up out there and humming along as we speak.
Now, Andy Harper, last week we presented you with the great Spawning Salmon T-shirt, which I know you've barely taken off in the past week.
Yes, it's turned into my nightshirt.
That's a horrendous image for all of us.
Well, only if you want it to be, Murray. And let's not get personal so early in the show. Can we just warm up to a couple of before we barb each other?
Sure.
Mate, I've been inundated with requests for a Spawning Salmon T-shirt. I said, I just have to redirect them. I don't know if this is going to turn into sales for the proprietor, but I tell you what, it has created a storm. It's one of the reasons why I can't take it off. It's now better than my personality.
Were they familiar with the phrase already, or did the Baldcast reinvigorate that famous commentary from about 08, 09, was it?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't really indulge that discussion particularly, Speedy.
I think I was taken
by the colour and the graphic, actually. And there's a guy in one of the teams up here where I live whose nickname is the Salmon. So guess what? The team wants to get him for his birthday.
Yeah, right.
Go to the website. Football Cult.
Yeah, Nice one, mate. Good plug.
Now, dot the I's and cross the T's. From last week, we left you with that trivia question about which player had gone 17 straight wins, an A-League record. And finally, it came to Andy Harper and Brenton Speed after we were off air last week. Who was it, Speedy?
The great Yusuf Hirsey with two different clubs.
Yes, it was. He finished that season with the Western Sydney Wanderers on a roll and started the next one with Perth on a roll. 17 straight wins, quite phenomenal.
Suspended from the grand final. So he kept his winning streak going.
That means he missed that loss. All right, Speedy, take it away with the Brazzalies for this week.
Yes, well, we were... Yeah, graced with football royalty last week in Australia. What a night it was.
Pierluigi Collina?
No, Alireza Fagani, best referee in the world. Best ref in the world.
Do you have a poster of him on your bedroom wall?
I'd have one if they made one.
You're calling for a Ricardo poster.
What a referee. So he came into town. He does the Sydney FC against Shanghai SIPG game. Everyone called it the best game that they've seen in this country in the last 12 months. It was a 3-3 draw. He gave that brave first-time penalty decision without the need of VAR. How many refs would have missed that? I would say 6% of referees around the world would have given that pen.
Not 5.5%?
No, I reckon 6. 6% give that pen. Alireza Fagani gives the pen. It leads to a goal. It leads to more momentum in the game. And we get a 6-goal thriller because of that referee.
Mm.
Don't underestimate it. He refereed so brilliantly, diffusing situations with the the emphatic whistle and then the pointing of fingers and nonsense. And it was over. Every potential blue touch paper being lit situation was cancelled out by Alireza Fagani, who refereed a game at the World Cup last year, the best game of that tournament. Was it Argentina in a 7-goal shootout?
With France? Yep.
He refereed that game.
Yep.
Should have been given the World Cup final.
I just like the idea that at Cogra Jubilee earlier this season, there was a lot of Japanese fans waiting at the entrance to get their photos and the signature with the great Keisuke Honda when he played there in the Big Blue. I'm just imagining Brenton Speed waiting outside for an autograph or a photo or a selfie with the referee. That would be brilliant.
Well, I tweeted Daniel Garb during the game and I said, can you please get me an autograph, given that you're there, of not Oscar, not Hulk, but Alireza Fagani.
Right.
So he gets 6 votes this week.
6.
And then here's this Frenchman. He's back. I couldn't believe it. He featured in the Brazzalies a few weeks ago. Nicolas Ranvillers. Remember him?
Yes, good pronunciation.
He got a shout out a few weeks back. Well, he's in again. This morning, Juventus play Ajax. He must be one of those oversharers on Facebook, you know, or he sends you those spam sort of messages. Because
you've got inside his
Cristiano
head.
Ronaldo heads home the opener for Juventus, and Nicolas Ranville goes, come over here and have a look. Come over here and have a look, Clement Turpin, the referee in the middle. Should just be back to halfway and we get on with it. But he goes, come over and have a look at this.
Ruining the moment.
You've got to see this.
Yep.
You know, the two Ajax blokes, they wipe each other out. Have a look at it. So Clement Turpin's going, why am I over here?
Right.
To overrule the goal.
Have we got another
Nicolas Rainville minus two. Felix Brisch, the German egg. With a classic example of subconscious refereeing or the Greg Carpenter Melbourne Cup handicapping, Barcelona, you're really good. Man United, you're not so good. So Paul Pogba, you can kick that bloke three times in a row. Pogba goes whack, whack, whack from behind. And Brisch goes, that's a foul. No yellow card. And Barcelona and the fans are just whistling going, who is this Muppet in the middle who doesn't know that's a yellow card? Fred makes 10 fouls in the game, no yellow. Ashley Young pulls blokes back, as is his remit, no yellow card. But when Suarez has the hide to complain to the referee about, why aren't you giving yellow cards, you Muppet? First yellow card, only yellow card of the game, Luis Suarez. Don't question me. I am Felix Brisch. And I've got minus three votes in the Brazzali.
Truly international Brazzalis from you, Speedy. Didn't even focus on one Australian referee.
No. Well, I think we have to give a point towards now to Speedy for his awarding of points in the Brazzali.
So we actually rate his Brazzalis?
I think so. Because, again, his new love child, Alex King, has escaped scrutiny.
So we are the VAR of Brazzalis?
I think so.
And you got King in the gun?
You've got King in the gun.
No, you Is that what you call it? I'm just flabbergasted. I'm flummoxed. I think it's egregious. It's an egregious oversight by
It's outrageous Brazzali. And egregious.
It's outrageous. It's unconscionable. One of Speedy's pet hates is attacking play being stopped by defenders who have no intent to play football just to stop an attack and killing the moment for fans who pay money to watch excitement. And Alex King's in the gun. Now, I know he's Speedy's new love child. Maybe he's the new rhyming with Philip Gillett for the future.
Yep, King rhymes with bling, yep.
And I think if he's going to attain those heights, and we certainly believe he can, I certainly think he's got enormous potential, but I think he's got to come into the Speed's crosshairs. The Speed has to measure him up. He's got to give him some Brazzali feedback so that he gets on top of this blight that's developing in his game. It's consecutive weeks now, Speedy.
You've been given a task, Speedy.
Which moment, what minute? Let me go back and look at it.
Well, I'm not as left-brain as you, Speedy. So, when you said 6% of referees, an amazing quantum to be able to pluck that out of your ear, 6% of referees would have got that right. I thought maybe 5.5% might have been a little bit closer. So I don't actually have the minute, but it was early, and I made some comment about it because then I decided I have to stop talking about this because it's getting boring. And you've got to fix it.
And my point would be, I've given a shout-out to Ben Wilson before, but the highlights of Ali Reza Fagani's performance should be put on an app and sent to every A-League referee. This is how you referee.
Right, let's go back to the shoe phone. Harps, Shane Lowry, the player you enjoyed watching from the weekend.
Well, I don't know. Have we mentioned him much this year? I know every
Yes,
now
I, I mentioned him
up.
Once. I mentioned him once as a player I enjoyed watching. Yep.
Yeah, good on you, mate. So, he's a guy, completely committed to whichever team he plays in. That's, I think, the assessment you can make. Very diligently goes about his business, incredibly focused, great commitment. But because he's surrounded by so many great players and a team that's playing great at the moment, apart from you picking him out earlier in the season, Muzz, not a lot gets said about Shane Lowry. And so I want to add to that chorus now. I think he's been just fantastic with central defending partners sort of falling off and coming back and falling off again with injuries. Sporanovic, Alex Grant, etc. Tomislav Marchula. He's just been the constant. And we all know you only have to listen to Robbie Cornthwaite and other ex-Wanderers players talk about how Popovich built his teams. Defence first, and it just speaks to how important Shane Lowry has been in this winning of the Premier's plate. So Well done to Shane Lowry.
Does he get a...
Well done to you, Belford, for picking him up early.
Socceroos potential, or is that bird flown?
I think that bird's probably flown, but he wouldn't let you down. No way would he let you down. I think he could easily do a great job there if you made it.
Murray Shaw, which player did you enjoy watching?
I enjoyed watching a bloke who didn't play the entire 90 minutes, but I just think it's a great story, and that is the Western Sydney Wanderers, Giancarlo Gallofuoco, who was a long time ago now at Spurs with Massimo Luongo as youngsters. I think they both went to school together in Sydney at Waverley College. And Massimo Luongo went one way, and Giancarlo Gallofuoco went another way after Spurs struggled at Swansea, came back to the Melbourne Victory briefly, barely played as a central defender, and then it was off to like National League in the UK, which is like the fifth tier of football over there, playing for teams like Torquay and Dover, and then off to the Serie C in Italy playing for Rieti, and then he's come back to the A-League, and I think he's really found his spot there as a sort of defensive midfielder for the Western Sydney Wanderers. Was fantastic, helped turn the game, I thought, on Saturday evening, and it might be one for the future. I'm not sure what his contract is and whether he's got another year, but it's certainly...
No, he's an injury replacement for O'Doherty.
Oh, he is, okay. So someone you'd think they'd be looking at for next season, wouldn't you, Harps?
Well, that's evidently your opinion. The management, I'm led to believe, and I'm taking this secondhand because I don't follow social media directly, as you know, but talking to people around the Wanderers, and they were copping a bit of heat, actually, for his recruitment. It wasn't an overly popular one. The fans, I think, have got bigger things in their eyes. But
yep.
Your assessment's a fair one, Mars. I don't think he can be criticised for the contribution at all. Quite the opposite. I think he's done a very good job in difficult circumstances.
And he made Boz's team of the week, and he only played 45 minutes because Kieran Backus was dragged. What a horrible decision by Backus that led to the Sydney FC goal when he had all that space to his right and yet he played the touch to the left, which favoured Sydney FC. Three players from Sydney FC had the chance to take that ball rather than none if he went the other way. And that's the decision-making that has to improve for Kieran Backus. No wonder he got dragged.
The other thing about Gallofuoco is it's a great lesson in never giving up. You know, you've had to battle all the way through those teams like Torquay and Dover and Rieti in Italy. And who's to say that he doesn't land himself a nice contract with the Western Sydney Wanderers and ends up doing an Aaron Moy, you know, impressing and getting a bigger offer to go back overseas. So well done to Giancarlo Gallofuoco. Now, Speedy, the player you enjoyed watching, this one's a bit of outside the box from you, and I'm glad to say it's not a referee, but tell us.
I'm dropping a player and just saying what I enjoyed watching on the weekend was I actually had some AFL commitments, so I called the game Essendon over Brisbane at the MCG, and then I caught up with a mate. I said, what are you up to? And he goes, well, I'm going to the A-League game. So I walked across, straight across. What a wonderful sporting precinct it is around there. So I walked from the MCG across to Amy Park, and I sat in the crowd right near the Adelaide United fans in the away corner there. They really are tucked away, the away fans at Amy Park, but they were singing, they were having banter, there were smiles on their faces, and then the other crowd sort of mixed in around them, a real melting pot. And then in the row in front of me, there was a young boy. So there was parents and then two young boys. The young boy was chucking his guts up and came with a sick bag. So obviously it was in the plans.
Mm.
So he's committed. The family is that committed that they're bringing an ill child to watch their A-League fix for the weekend. Mm. And he has to, you know, chuck his guts up and then go to the bathroom and fix himself up and then come back out and watch the rest of the game. And they watch a goalless draw. So that those players, the players listen to the broadcast? I'm sure they do.
I'm sure they do.
Yeah, like Scott Jamieson.
They say they don't.
They'd be listening.
They say they don't.
So Scott Jamieson, the captain of that club, maybe just have a word about the commitment that comes in the stands and maybe turn on a better performance if you can find it within yourselves to entertain the fans who come and watch the game and put their bodies and health on the line for you.
Not to mention their hard-earned cash. Speaking of fans and moving on to Perth Glory, who of course wrapped up the Premier's plate on Sunday with that victory over Newcastle, I read on social media a great letter from a diehard Perth Glory fan, and I'll read it to people who aren't as across social media, perhaps, or some. What a crazy 24 hours. This comes from a bloke called John Turner, a long-time Perth Glory fan. What a crazy 24 hours. The tension in the stands, the VAR interventions, the seemingly never-ending amount of stoppage time added by Kurt Ams, then elation, joy, tears, hugs, screams, love, respect. 15 years champions. To some, it'll mean nothing, this letter, and by all means, go ahead with your daily lives, but to others, you'll know where I'm heading. There's been a lot of conjecture in recent years about football in this country. Some are disenfranchised, some sick of people leading the charge, and some who want the A-League to die tomorrow. And that's fine. People are entitled to their opinion, and debate is always great. Does Australian football need change? 100%. Do we need to work towards plans for the future to integrate each and every facet of the community? Absolutely. Can this happen tomorrow? Who knows? But in the present, I'm happy with it. Happy that after 15 years of ups and downs, the club I've adored has managed to fill its trophy cabinet once again. We've seen the club at its bare bones, almost folding after the events of the salary cap. We've seen player disputes, managerial standoffs and fan revolts. We've seen owners threatened, people walk and tell you they won't be back. We've come within a whisker of glory and had it snatched away on multiple occasions. We've wondered, why do we still even bother? Well, my friends, this season has proven that good things come to those that are patient and committed. It's been amazing, even from round one when people were lamenting playing it out from the back. What's it resulted in? Unbeaten in 12 away games. A team from Perth, no chance, but this team has found a way to do it. Beaten twice all season. Tell me how many clubs across the world have suffered a lower amount of losses this season. I'd struggle to count more than one. Played exceptional attacking football, coupled with a team that works so hard for each other and moves heaven and earth to win the game. This Perth team can. So whilst you may feel disenchanted with football, or the A-League isn't hitting its peak, or you're none too pleased because the Wanderers, Sydney or Victory are not top of the tree, consider this. 15 years is a fair old wait for us football fans in Perth, and you don't have to care nor like us, but let us enjoy our time in the spotlight because it doesn't happen often. We're just enjoying the journey as it goes. The pride of West Australia, the famous Glory Boys. And I say, well done to Perth Glory. Well done to the Tony and Jacob Burns combination for what they've done and turn fans like John Turner around this season.
I thought John focused on the referee a bit too much there.
Coming from you. What do you make of that, Harps? It's good to hear, isn't it?
But it's lovely. It sums everything up. And as I was listening to this emotion come through as you read it, very well read too, Murray. Have you got a background in this game?
No.
I'm thinking, you know what? Perth Glory's burst out of the blocks in 1996. And in a matter of years, were the preeminent football club in the country. And so maybe Perth fans from way back then thought, how easy is this gig? And life, and particularly football, can more often than not and from time to time bend you over and teach you a lesson. And whatever, that was just so beautifully articulated by that fan. They have learned plenty of lessons. They've experienced the whole range of football emotions. And that's why Sunday afternoon and Sunday evening was such a special one for Perth. No surprise in a football sense that Popovich has engineered this, but massive relief and enjoyment for the fans with the big one to come. I mean, let's not forget, they've won the Premier's plate, but to be champions of Australia is what everyone craves, and they've still got that big one to play for.
And to host a grand final, they have to take on one of those teams that is fighting for fourth spot at the moment. You'd imagine.
Correct.
Yeah.
So the likelihood of being an Adelaide, Melbourne City or a Wellington to get them into the grand final.
Yeah, at their place.
Now, I don't know whether you saw it, Speedy, or Harps, but a fantastic article from Robbie Cornthwaite in the Players' Voice website this week, which I think you can find on the foxsports.com.au, just detailing the immense levels of the level that Tony Popovich goes to prepare his team. And Robbie Cornthwaite in this article, for those who haven't read it, was talking about how they each get iPads and they get clips on those iPads of what they've done during the game and heading into the weekend, what the opposition is likely to do. But it says a lot about the effort that Tony Popovich and his coaching staff put into making sure that the team that gets out on the park is perfectly prepared.
And this is often what I bang on about coaches who don't do this in the A-League. I've seen it too many times. They think that if they're at this level, if they're at this level, they should know how to do that. But Popper doesn't see it that way. He goes, obviously, you haven't learnt it, so I'm going to teach it and drum it into you. The case in point about which leg Robbie Cornthwaite was using to block shots. He was using the wrong leg because Tony Popovich is a former central defender who played in the Premier League. So he goes to Robbie Cornthwaite, who hasn't played in the Premier League, and he says, you should be blocking it with your right foot, for instance, so you can land and then get back into position quicker, but you're blocking it with your left foot or vice versa, whatever the case was. And Popovich was prepared to drum this into the player until they got it right. Other coaches would say, well, he's crossing. You know, that's why he's in the A-League. His crossing's not up to Premier League standard. Well, work on that bloody crossing, for God's sake.
Hello?
Did you read the article, Hubs?
No, but it's great to hear you talk about it. Robbie Cornthwaite's making a lot of sense, so congratulate him. A recent graduate out of the playing ranks into the Illuminati, if I should say, and espousing opinions and very well articulated ones. But what turned me, and obviously I've not worked with Popovich, I've just watched him, what turned me to his style, and it's a style now which I'll just scream loud from the rooftops, because it's the aggregation of all this stuff, Speedy. You would have plenty of coaches, tech-driven coaches who clip up footage of players and sports coders, and they'd all get their weekly or daily training footage of what they did wrong and what they did right. And some of these coaches, excuse me, mightn't have the rest of what Popovich brings. The thing that got me was this: the first season of the Wanderers, first and second season of the Wanderers. You're turning up. Very often, there's a really convivial attitude and exchange between players of rival teams before the game. It's a function of everyone playing on their home turf, in their home country. It's a function of the number of players who've rotated around the clubs and the league. It's a function of guys who've played for Australia together. And so there is this bond between players, which oftentimes leads to a really convivial atmosphere in the tunnel. Before games. What I noticed about Popovich, and between coaches as well, what I've noticed about Popovich, certainly in the early days of the Wanderers, you'd never see him on the field before the game. I never, ever saw Tony Popovich strolling around on the field like 90 minutes or something before kickoff, shaking hands with opponents, catching up with opposing coaches who were buddies from days gone by. Never did it. Never, ever did it. His players in the tunnel lining up always only look straight ahead. I can't remember in those early days of the Wanderers, Nikolai Topol Stanley, Michael Beacham, looking sideways and smiling at their opponents against whom they're about to do battle. And the last thing I noticed, this all is the picture that has been created by Popovich in my mind of how he works. But the last thing I noticed was the gear stewards and the assistant coaches always set up the warm-ups on A-League game day, right? Well, you know, they might empty the bag of balls and leave a group of balls there and set the hats up. Not for the Wanderers. They had this beautiful young man, I don't know his surname, but Slavica was the gear steward for the first few years. Mate, he used to get down on his hands and knees, line the balls up for the first drill so that they were all sitting on the same angle with the insignias, the Nike insignias, all presented in exactly the same fashion, angled on the same blade of the blades of grass next to each other. That type of attention to detail and discipline that went through the whole club is a key reason why Popovich does what he does and is successful, and then gives out these footage clips of players, what they should work on, and that's why they listen to it, and that's why they respond to it, because it's all part of the atmosphere he creates. And that's why a lot of people, me included, were very confident that Perth were going to do something special this year with the big one still to come.
Another gear steward did that recently, and someone pointed it out from the commentary box, and they thought maybe they had OCD.
Yeah. Well, it could well be. Maybe Popper's got OCD.
Whatever.
It works with his football team. Right?
Exactly. Whatever it's happening, it's working. All right. As often happens towards the end of an A-League season, we start to get some big names calling it quits. We've seen a couple in the last week being Alex Brosk and Carl Valeri. And my understanding is there might be another one in the coming days. Stay tuned. But in both Alex Brosk and Carl Valeri, I look at those two players and I think there's a couple of true leaders. And I can't see a lot of real leaders around the A-League, that blokes that, you know, a team gets 1-0 down, Speedy, and Alex Brosk or Carl Valeri says to the rest of his teammates, come on, we're not out of this, let's go. And they all get behind him and go. So not only two great players, but two great leaders leaving us.
Yeah, great fellas too. Great grab as well from Carl Valeri talking about his dad.
Yep, Walter.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of you sending me to Walter Valeri's place in Canberra. Must be about a decade ago now.
That's right, yep.
And I went in and met Carl's mum and dad, and he pulled out the scrapbook, so proud of what Carl had achieved and also what Canberra football is all about. And no wonder he was waxing lyrical about his dad. What a fabulous family that he came from in Canberra, and now he's, you know, become a true leader of the Melbourne Victory. And Alex Brosk is someone I've had a little bit to do with along the journey as well, and he's just an absolute gentleman. And I think he's gotten better as a finisher the longer his career has gone on.
He's got much better as a player the longer his career has gone on, which has been the comment made by some this week, Harps, that his application towards the end of his career has been quite phenomenal.
Yeah, and I think it was the second move overseas that did it. He left a Foundation A-League player, Broski, with Queensland Roar as they were. Had some time in Holland with Feyenoord, and as we've watched Broski develop, he just wasn't ready for that move. He wasn't focused enough. He wasn't hungry enough. I think he'd say this of himself, because he came back to Australia, and it was the move to Japan which really set him off and started to become the player that he was always going to be. You know, there's a magnificent story. I was in Brazil with Johnny Warren in the early parts of this millennium, and we visited Vasco da Gama Club. We were doing a bit of a talent ID scouting thing in Brazil. And the youth director, the head youth coach, remembered a young Australian team. In the old days, the Australian Institute of Sport used to go on international tours, and Ron Smith would take them to South America. I think it was one of these AIS tours, at any rate. This head coach of Vasco da Gama said, oh, yeah, we had an Australian crew through here. It was Kamisa Tenney, said the kid who wore number 10 was just outstanding, and he was talking about Alex Brosk. This was the talent that was emerging as a youngster out of Southwest Sydney, and thankfully, close to home, we've got to watch it flourish. A great leader, a great player. On the broader issue, Mars, am I hearing what you're hearing, B2, that there is a third? We're losing probably this season three outstanding A-League, in my mind, legends. Two of them foundation players. I won't mention the third because it's yet to be confirmed.
Yep.
But this person...
We're hearing the same jungle drums.
Yeah, if it's this person to be announced, along with Broski and Carl Valeri, just... This is severe hemorrhaging for the league, you know, and I hope their clubs send them off properly. Carl Valeri I don't know what he wants to do post-football, but...
Stay involved, let's hope.
One of two things, involved at Melbourne Victory, or if he moves back to Canberra and spearheads an A-League thing out of Canberra, would be very fitting. Just a great citizens of the game, both of them, and we're going to miss them deeply. They've contributed mightily.
Yes, so stay tuned for that announcement as potentially another great farewells the game. And as you said, let's hope that Alex Brosk, I get the feeling with Alex Brosk that Sydney FC do have something planned for him, and Carl Valeri is very highly thought of, not only amongst his fellow players at Melbourne Victory, but also the board and executives at the club.
And don't underestimate.
I reckon these will be the biggest departures from the league since Archie. Archie Thompson left a massive hole. He just created so many stories for the A-League. I can't think of bigger names that are announcing their retirement. It's going to take a bit to recover. I'm quite sad about it, actually. Very, very wistful.
Yeah, and you mentioned the time in Japan, but he also went to Al-Ain in the UAE, and that did a lot for his game as well, because he scored a lot of goals there. Yeah, he scored a lot of goals there and played alongside Omar Abdul-Rahman and played along some real stars in that competition. I think it boosted his confidence to come back to the A-League and take it on.
Put a lot of financial pressure off him, that's for sure.
Yep, one of Alex Brosk's former teammates, as a matter of fact, Mark Rudan, announced during the week, or pretty much at the end of last week, that he won't be continuing at Wellington Phoenix. Surprise, surprise. And the mail is, and it's fairly strong, that he'll be in charge of Western United for next season. I can't imagine that took anyone by surprise, Speedy. But I guess there's some people saying, well, when are Western United going to announce that he's coaching? But do they need to?
Well, they don't need to. They need to make sure it's got maximum exposure. So that's probably after the A-League season, maybe the week immediately after on the Tuesday or the Monday. Probably the Tuesday, 11 a.m. press conference, I'd say, Muzz, would be the time to maximise the exposure. And I would say the media department at Western United have already targeted that day.
Yes. Harps, looking at Western United, they announced another 3 signings during the week. So it's now up to 11 that they've got locked in. Just quickly going through them, it's Kone, Calva, Asprotomides, Risden, Connor Chapman, Piraeus, Payne, Pasquale, Stamatolopoulos, Yule and Cavallo. You'd have to think that the next 12 players that they bring in, so that's 11 of their 23, they've now got to sort of start going a little bit more top end. They've sort of filled that sort of middle to lower range player, and now they need to start looking at, you know, first teamers, I guess, if you like.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I was just, as you're reading out those names, I'm thinking, well, maybe they've got a raft of players still involved in the finals race, the championship race, and that's why they're not announcing it. But, of course, Aaron Calver fits into that category as well. They weren't shy about releasing that one. So,
who's played quite well the last couple of weeks, Aaron Calver, well, to be fair.
Yeah, no, there's no question. And every time he plays well, I'm sure Sydney are thinking, geez, look, we're sad that this one's got away. So he'll prove to be a good signing, I think, if he can stay fit. But you're right, Mars. Yeah, you're right. I think they're building the back end of the roster nicely, with a few notable exceptions. Of course, Calver is playing well enough to be considered a rusted-on star at this point. Joshy Risden, etc. Kone, the marquee player, etc., etc., etc. But basically what the squad is at the moment is emerging young players, or Tier B players, if we can put it that way, who've shown they can probably handle the A-League but haven't really built a career yet. So they need to, and I'm sure they will, they really need to top up the front part of their roster, and it's going to be very interesting to see. I mean, Speedy's pretty definite that they'll wait for the announcement of the coach of his to be Mark Britton. I think that's a debatable point. I think, you know, there's a lot of people wondering what's been going on, and why not just come out and say, bang, this is our coach.
But if he's coach of Wellington, it's going to look strange if the Wellington coach suddenly turns up with all the colours at a press conference. Are you saying you just want a press release put out on it? But you're not going to hold a press conference, are you, when he's still Wellington coach?
I'm with you, Spuddy.
Yeah. Right.
Do you think they should? Or?
Well, it's probably a bit late now. They're only talking about hanging on for a few weeks. So you're probably right. But this has been a difficult one for them to manage from the start, signing players. But who's the coach? Who's the coach? And it just develops a mysterious momentum that I think you could do without. And so part of me thinks, well, now that the coast is clear, and we're assuming that the jungle drums are right, that is rooting, but let's just accept that. Part of me thinks, why not you're just getting the industrial strength fan blowing all the mystery away and say, yep, here's the bloke who's been making the decision.
And, of course, you know, the rumour that everyone believed about Rudan becoming the coach of Western United has been there for about a month, and the results of Wellington have dropped off. And Mark
Only Bosley, in the last couple of weeks. Only in the last couple of weeks, to be fair.
Yeah.
The rumours have been around for a while, and the team was still doing well. In the last couple of weeks, when they've been on the road, they've dropped off.
Yeah, and Mark Bosnich made the point that, you know, if the results don't improve in the final two rounds, then do you send him on his way and say thanks very much and we'll go with a Chris Greenacre or someone like that
to take charge for one game?
Well, hopefully three games.
Absolutely not. Yeah. Absolutely not.
All three
absolutely
games.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I mean, Greenacre's been he's been the fill-in twice already and has done enough to just maintain a job at the club, but he hasn't shown that they can mount a finals charge with him.
But
they're going to make the finals.
Has it changed the vibe, though, of Wellington? Because
the vibe's been there forever, Speedy. I don't think so. No.
I called their game against Brisbane the other night and they were putrid.
Yeah.
And the week before, they got 3-0 down against Adelaide United by half-time. I mean, that's hardly befitting of the style of play they had earlier in the season.
No, I totally agree. When news of Rudan being linked with Western United broke, they did also ratchet up that record score in favour of themselves. They're not in a great patch at the moment. It might be that the players have started to look sideways because of Mark Rudin's decision. It might be because they're seeing some inconsistencies. It might just be bad form. I think they've done enough this year, and individuals have responded so well to the coach this year. I think it's reasonable to expect that they'll regain form and enter the finals in better nick than they are currently. Every team goes through a rough patch. I mean, Melbourne Victory, who played some scintillating football on the weekend, it was only a few weeks ago they were in the middle of a five-game unbeaten, winless run, something like that. So the form comes and goes. The big test of the connection between coach and his players, it's a connection that we've heard a lot about this year at Wellington. The big test is that they get back into form and don't leave it lingering so that people can start asking questions.
And the back,
but to remove Rudin would be silly.
And the background is, look, which players does Mark Rudin want at his next club? Which players at Wellington have Western United been trying to lure across, and have they signed any yet? And are they able to get Roy Krishna across to follow? Well, the word is that Krishna won't be following. And so some people at the club know that, he rates Krishna, but he doesn't rate
it's
me.
You're right, Pete. It's not an easy situation, but professional dressing rooms are not easy situations for a whole heap of reasons a lot of the time, not because the coach is going. Any of the finals clubs at the moment could have issues around what come in the coach is doing. And you don't really ask those questions when the team is winning, but you only take a couple of losses and all of a sudden people are starting to question what people are having for breakfast.
So, Harps, two of the players that Western United announced this week in Jonathan Aspromides and Connor Payne, both were in the Mariners' side on the weekend, taking on the Melbourne Victory, as was Matt Miller. Three players that they obviously knew weren't going to be there next season.
I can't agree with that.
Were you surprised by that? Because in the Wanderers' Sydney Derby match, I thought his substitutions of Baumjohann and Riera were basically Babbel saying, well, you're not part of my plans next season, so I'm going to start working with some people who are.
I said that during the call. I mean, I cannot for the life of me understand why Alan Stajic isn't trying to make a point. If you get the gig next year and beyond, if that hasn't happened yet, and that's what he wants to happen, all you're doing now is preparing Jonathan Aspromides for Western United.
He wants to be known as Aspro.
All right, good, because that's better for my headache situation.
I'm just getting out another rhymes with Phillip Gillett, because Aspro.
Arps just made a headache joke. You missed it.
Speedy was too busy with his Phillip Gillett. all you're doing is preparing him for Western United, Connor Payne as well, and Matty Miller for Newcastle. I mean, when was the last time Josh Risden played for the Wanderers?
Yep.
The investment stops there now. Unless you're going to win something, and then... I mean, the Wanderers could still have made the finals when they cut. They effectively cut Joshie Risden. The only reason the Mariners could play these guys is if they're in the finals hunt, which obviously they're not. Otherwise, what about giving some of your kids a chance to show what they can do?
Yep.
It just doesn't make sense to me.
Western Sydney Wanderers fans pack out the stadium as much as they can for that Sydney derby, and the game's in the balance, and Baumjohann's clearly their best player with the ability to open up Sydney FC's defence, and you take him off. I'm a Wanderers fan. I'm sitting there, I'm going, I want to win this game. I want bragging rights tonight.
But that's short-term thinking versus long-term
thinking. I don't care. I'm a fan. I want to win this game tonight.
Yeah, okay. And what if they play Giancarlo Gallofoico for half a game and he turns up to be the superstar next season when they win the title?
That's because he replaced Backus, because Backus had a finger.
You take my point. The point is, if there's long-term thinking
Who came
involved,
on for Baumjohann?
Just trying to think who came on. Speedy's onto Google. next week, Harps, on the A-League, let's look at your Newcastle Jets and what went wrong this season, because that's 8 out of 9 years now that they've missed the finals. And I think, given what they did last season, they've probably got away with a bit this season. It just really hasn't worked at all for the Newcastle Jets. And we'll do this next week.
Yeah, that's another bit extreme, I think, to say that it hasn't worked at all.
Well, in comparison to last season, it hasn't worked, has it? We saw what they were capable of.
No, sure, but when you put at all in there, you're just saying it hasn't worked at all, like it's a total failure. I don't think that's fair, because they've delivered some great attacking statistics across the league. Most shot, I'm not sure if it's current, but certainly up until a few weeks ago, they'd had the most shots on goal, forced the most saves, most entries into the ball, that sort of stuff. So the wheels hadn't completely fallen off. But it's incredibly disappointing what you're saying, Muzz. The fans after last year were thinking, finally we're here.
Yep.
I mean, the Newcastle Knights in the NRL aren't helping the city either. They said they're becoming a perennial basket case too, and that with a big takeover from the West Leagues Club, and they're funded really well now, the Knights. So the Newcastle fans of A-League and NRL are licking wounds seriously at the moment. And last year, the Jets broke through for that grand final performance.
More next week. More next week, Arps. We'll talk about it more next week.
So
but all I'm saying is they had a big opportunity. I think they had record membership this year because of what they did last season, and they didn't deliver on expectation. Go on, Speed.
Yeah, Roy O'Donovan being out suspended for a long time didn't help them hit the ground running. But who replaced Baum Johan looking for the future?
Who was it?
Mark Bridge.
Looking to the future.
Who won't be there next year either.
Well, he's entitled to a send-off, and we should have added him, actually, as a good point, Speedy, to the Brosk Valeri legends who are leaving at the end of the season. Now, Champions League quickly this morning. Ajax was the big result, knocking out Cristiano Ronaldo and Juventus. No surprise that Barcelona were too good for Manchester United, thanks to some bloke called Lionel Messi. By the sounds of it, Speedy, from your Brazil, you had both TV screens on both games this morning.
That's back-to-back away wins for Ajax in the Champions League against Real Madrid 4-1. And against Juventus 2-1, it could have been 4-1 again, 5-1. They are playing unbelievable football, this young team.
Australian football should follow suit. I'd say, you know, let's get a Dutch coach, maybe a Dutch... go on.
Yeah. Sebastian Pasquale has been on the training pitch with a lot of these guys, comes back to Western United, so he will have got plenty of football intel after playing with Jong Ajax on many occasions, but their passing and movement, just spellbinding, and Neres and Dusan Tadic, and they bring Huntelaar off the bench, and they got De Ligt in the heart of defence. I mean, the first European team that I ever fell in love with was Ajax in the early 90s with Finidi George and Jari Limpmanen and Patrick Kluivert. Note the name, Patrick Kluivert, you know, scoring goals, and they're doing it again. They are unbelievable, the football they're playing. And Man United had a chance in the first minute. Marcus Rashford threw on goal and he goes for the old Romario toe poke and miscues a little bit, hits the crossbar, had wrong-footed the keeper, but should really have scored. And then it's 1-1 on aggregate and game on. Instead, Messi goes down the other end, then De Gea, world's best goalkeeper, as a stinker.
If Sinan's pots and pans, from what I saw, Barcelona could have won by 5 and 6 anyway, and maybe the early goal wouldn't have mattered at all. But I like what you're thinking, Speedy, because you're always looking at the narrative. All right, in the Premier in the Premier League this morning, Matt Ryan's in trouble. His Brighton side were beaten at home 2-0 by Cardiff, and basically it's those two teams slugging it out to try and remain in the top flight. So Brighton are on 33 points, Cardiff are on 31. Brighton have got 5 games remaining, but at the moment you can't see them where they're going to get points. They've got Wolves away, Spurs away, Newcastle at home, ding, Arsenal ding, ding, away. Ding.
That's the one.
And Man City at home, what, Spurs away?
Newcastle, huh?
Oh, Newcastle. Okay, so they might pick up, what do you reckon, 3?
Maybe, yeah.
Which would get them on 36. So then Cardiff on 31 would need 2 wins. They've got Liverpool at home this weekend. Then they've got Fulham away.
Ding, ding.
Palace at home.
Ding, ding.
And Manchester United away. So according to the Brenton Speed logic or factor, you've got Cardiff staying up and Brighton going down.
Yeah, I can see Warnock pulling it off, the great Neil Warnock.
Which then leads to, it would be an amazing performance from Cardiff given where they were a few months ago. Then leads you to think, if Matty Ryan goes down to the Championship, is there another Premier League team that's going to take him? What do you think, Harps? Would he get snapped up, or would Brighton be like very keen to keep him on, go down to the Championship for a season, then try and get straight back up there?
Well, of course, that would be Brighton's ambition, whether or not, you know, that matches what the bean counters at the club think is feasible or reasonable. I'd be really surprised, given the headlines Matt Ryan's driven this year, that there wouldn't be a Premier League club impressed enough with that form to take him on. Really surprised. Don't you?
Yeah, I'm just wondering where. So I suppose if you're a newly promoted Premier League team, you might go for someone like Matt Ryan. Having watched Watford's goalkeeper the other morning, Ben Foster giving away that goal to Arsenal that cost them the win, you sort of think, well, Matty Ryan's never going to do that. I mean, it's a fantastic...
Well, what about De Gea in the Champions League?
Well, De Gea in the Champions League as well. Yeah, it's just... it's probably going to come down to a lot to what Brighton want to do with him and what their tactics are if they were to go down. Whether they want to keep everyone and just have it a one-year hiatus and then go straight back up to the Premier League. Or whether they're going to make some money by selling some players.
Maybe Matty Ryan can produce one of those astonishing performances on the final day and make a lot of Aussie fans happy as Liverpool secure the Premier League title as he keeps out Man City and saves a late Aguero penalty. And then Brighton stay up by the point that he earns his club on that day. So maybe, just maybe, Brighton and Hove Albion
always
do stay
thinking
up.
About the narrative, Jared. Always thinking about the narrative.
I would like, there's no question, we don't know what's going to happen to Brighton. They could even survive the drop, despite the doom and gloom being preached here. What wouldn't surprise me, though, is if they do go down, that Matt's representatives start agitating. I'm not quite sure, given the status he has now in the game, that he really sees himself as a championship goalkeeper. And so it might not be the Premier League.
Yep.
Maybe his agent, his representatives might think, well, if it's not the Premier League, we go to a Tier 1 league elsewhere, but he's not playing championship football.
His agent is the former Middlesbrough player Mikel Beck, that you might remember. So, and he does have a lot of contacts on the continent. So we wait and see. Now, this weekend, Thursday, well, in the next coming days, Thursday night, it's Sydney versus Perth Glory at Net Strata, formerly Jubilee Stadium. There's the E-League as well.
Guard of Honour, Sydney FC, for the new premiers.
Whoa, Speedy tossing in one late into the bald cast. Yes.
Oh, I think you're right, Speedy. Didn't, I would hope they do.
It does happen,
Didn't Arnie demand that last year from Melbourne Victory?
Yeah, I can't believe it hasn't been spoken about. But watch all the articles come out now after the broadcast listeners, all the bloggers get on board.
Not only are you working on the narrative, but you're setting the agenda as well. Hey, Speedy.
Just on Perth, very quickly, I've been trying to find it since it happened. What's the status of Chris Economides?
I think it was only a couple of weeks.
Right.
So, I mean, if you're Perth, you probably...
Shoulder?
No, if you're Perth, you probably rest him for, what, the next two games and then unleash him in the finals.
Okay.
So Thursday, right. Sydney versus Perth Glory. Will Sydney give Perth Glory a guard of honour? Good point, Speedy. E-League also on straight after the A-League. Friday night, Adelaide versus Melbourne Victory. That should be a cracker with both sides needing wins for various reasons. Melbourne Victory trying to secure second and Adelaide trying to secure fourth. Saturday, it's four teams who can't make the final. But still plenty of interest. Brisbane, of course, at home again against the Newcastle Jets. Central Coast at home to the Western Sydney Wanderers. Wanderers fans usually travel in great numbers up to the Central Coast for that match. And then on Sunday, another crucial game as we look towards the top four, with Wellington back at home after 2 weeks on the road taking on Melbourne City. We're out of time, so I would like to say thank you to you, Brenton Speed.
Thank you, Mas.
Thanks to you, Harps.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Good stuff.
That's all we've got time for this week. Once again, Garby and Simon will be back on Monday for the flagship Fox Football podcast, and we'll be back same time next week. Bye for now.
On the fun ship.